Nicolet Bank is honored to support all who strive to make communities great. Newsmakers is a production of Wisconsin Eye. To keep programs like this free and accessible to all, please consider a charitable gift to wisi.org/donate or text WISI to 44321. This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. 1 week post-election and the dust is settling on the results, while analysts are already starting to make predictions about what this all means for Wisconsin's future. At Newsmakers, we've welcomed back to two veteran journalists to share their election reflections. We have Andrew Ball from the Capital Times and Adam Kelnoffer from the Wisconsin State Journal. Thank you both for coming back.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, thanks for having us.
So, I have to ask you first, have you had a chance to rest and relax since Tuesday night?
Yes. It might take a little while to catch up fully on sleep, but we're getting there.
You agree?
Yeah. I ended up finally getting to rake some of my leaves, so that was nice. But, yeah.
They had built up over these last few months. Yes. Okay. What do you count as the biggest surprise from election night?
Where to start? Yeah, you got so many options to pick from. I think that we saw in Wisconsin a split result where President Trump carried the state, as did U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin. That was certainly very much within the range of expected possibilities, but I suspect if you surveyed people, you probably would have thought that it would have fallen in line one way or the other. But we got a bunch of split-ticket voters again.
Anything else happened that you were completely not expecting?
The biggest surprise, I think, for me was how close the race was in the Senate race between Baldwin and Hovde. I thought Baldwin had that one in the bag, and it definitely turned out to be a harder race than I expected for her.
Many people now parsing through those results to think about where and why voters leaned the way that they did in this election. 68 of 72 counties shifted to the right. If you had to point, now this is going to be a hard question, if you had to point to one key reason why you think that happened, what would you say?
If I had to pick one key reason, and I do think this election was an election of, I've been saying the death by a thousand cuts. It's a lot of small areas, but I think the one driving issue has been economy. Inflation has been, I think, the biggest talking point for voters and politicians. Abortion is also a big issue, but it's not quite as big of an issue, at least looking at exit polls, as the economy was. And, you know, we have seen inflation slow over the past few years, but it's still, you know, everyday people are, who make up the vast majority of voters, are really struggling at the grocery store, paying energy bills and stuff like that. So I think economy was the winner and loser of this election.
You're going to agree?
Yeah, and I'll go beyond that. And I think that, you know, we saw this, and I think we maybe lost sight of it when Kamala Harris became the nominee. There was a burst of excitement there, you know, that obscured what has been the truth all along, is this is a deeply unpopular incumbent administration in Wisconsin. Polling has shown that from the beginning.
She wasn't able to shake that identity.
It seems the answer is no, and I think Adam's right. I mean, you saw other things going on with various different groups across the state that contributed to this, but, you know, this is just a state that wanted change. It wanted change less than all the other swing states, which I think is important to note, that Wisconsin was closer than Pennsylvania, Arizona, North Carolina, et cetera.
But what do you think the reason for that is? Why are we just a little bit different than those states?
I think, it's a great question. I think that two big reasons is you saw her turnout largely mirror what President Biden was able to do in Madison and, to a lesser extent, Milwaukee. That probably helped keep some of those coalitions
intact. It's just that Trump did that much better in other areas.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, each region of the state seems to tell a little bit of a different story in this election. Craig Gilbert wrote in the Journal Sentinel last week that what happened in western Wisconsin was used the word transformative. Would you agree with that?
I'll be honest, I've been paying more close attention to the eastern half of Wisconsin.
So what was happening there?
What we saw, as Andrew pointed out, voter turnout for Democratic candidates for Harris was just about as much as it was for Biden back in 2020, but there were just a few more Republican voters in Milwaukee County than back in 2020. So that, you know, a little bit extra here and there across the state will give a candidate an advantage, especially when we're talking about the last race, which was only 20,000 votes. That's all you had to get across the state of, 5.9 million people.
So. Were there any regions of the state that you were looking at that shifted in interesting ways?
Yeah, well, I will talk a little bit about western Wisconsin because I think it is interesting, whether that's part of the state that is getting more red or just getting more an alliance with President Trump, I think remains to be seen. But, western Wisconsin, southwest Wisconsin used to be thought of as this moderate, like the last part of the state that is really purple. I think you saw a little bit of that. They voted more, a lot of people split their ticket for Tammy Baldwin and for Rebecca Cook, the Democrat in the 3rd Congressional District, but less so than in years past. And that will raise a lot of interesting questions because that part of the state will remain important, I think, for both parties in statewide races going forward.
Do we think some of these shifts are permanent, or do you think that Wisconsin will always be kind of swingy in all of these categories?
I think Democrats would like to make them not permanent. In the midterms, and in Wisconsin, I'm sure we'll talk about this, but we have a state Supreme Court election in 6 months, which I don't think anyone really wants to think about just yet. But, that will start to show whether the messaging from Democrats will be different, whether they're going to go back to some of these issues like abortion and try and, rearticulate those ideas in light of what happened last week. Those will be our first signals on
if this is toward a permanent change.
And how successful Democrats are on eroding what the gains that President Trump made with working class voters and voters of color.
Adam, what about young voters? There were some inroads in college towns, which are normally kind of this stronghold area for Democrats. What happened there?
I focused a lot of my attention on the UW-Madison area, and we definitely saw Democrats lose a lot of ground there compared to back in 2020, which I think is really, really interesting because those college campuses used to be like bastions of Democratic voters for the Democratic Party, and you're just not seeing that anymore. It's hard to point out exactly what is resonating with younger voters for Trump, but I think we're seeing a lot of younger, probably white men, vote for Trump rather than Harris because they're just not seeing Harris offer them much out of her campaign.
One bright spot for Democrats, as you've mentioned, is this very narrow win by Senator Tammy Baldwin over Eric Hovde. However, she didn't get 50% of the vote. She still pulled out that victory. What do you find most interesting about her win?
Yeah, I mean, this is a really fascinating race. And you mentioned that she did not hit 50%. Something that Republicans have really focused on is the presence of two third-party candidates in the race that pulled potentially just enough support. I would push back on that argument, though, and say that, one of the candidates, Thomas Leger, he was running on the America First Party, which, conservatives are saying, well, that will trick people into voting for him who otherwise would support President Trump, who endorsed Eric Hovde. But, there were some factions of the conservative base that did not particularly care for Eric Hovde. And, I think you might have seen some people knowing exactly what they were doing, voting for one of those third-party candidates. And it wound up costing him the race, with the caveat that he did far better, I think, than most public polling and most observers really expected him to do.
Yeah, I think to add to that, too, we've seen Hovde complain a lot about Leger, especially pulling votes from him. But also, the flip side of that, I think, is if Eric Hovde really wanted to gain all those America First voters, he could have done a better job painting himself as their candidate rather than just kind of giving that battleground to Thomas Leger.
I think most voters had not even really paid attention to the other candidates in that race.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Adam, I wanted to ask you, Tammy, undefeated in 38 years of politics, which is a feat in and of itself. What can Democrats learn from her for future elections?
I think they can learn from her kind of pragmatic approach and really trying to she ran a campaign of running on all of the issues that she has worked on. So she's using her background and all of the 38 years of experience and work that she has to lean on And I think more Democrats need to do that and show the regular, average, working class people, who's the vast majority of voters, again, what the Democratic politicians are doing for those voters, because that's, you know, that's where the farmers are going to see it. That's where blue-collar workers are going to see it. So if you can show them what you're doing for them, then you're going to have a better time convincing them to vote for you.
Well, and I think also, particularly in rural areas, Senator Baldwin has honed that message for a long time. I mean, she...
Voters know her and have learned to trust her.
Yeah, I mean, somewhat rare for Democrats in statewide races, she was endorsed by the Wisconsin Farm Bureau, the political arm of the Farm Bureau. That almost never happens, and I think it speaks to this understanding that she knows what is important for Wisconsin and knows how to try and work behind the scenes in Washington to get things done on it.
Some of the soul searching for Democrats since last week has been around this issue of abortion. That was an issue that seemed to carry Democrats in the 2022 midterms, but didn't seem to have that same effect here in this election last week in 2024. Do you think voters mostly think that issue is settled, or did other issues, say like the economy, really just come to the forefront in terms of people's votes?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, and I think, you know, there's been a lot of debate over it, even here in Wisconsin. You know, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss earlier this week talked to the media, and he said that this is proof that you can't get much more mileage out of the abortion issue. It doesn't outweigh the economy. You know, I think there might be some truth to that, but I also think that depending on how President Trump approaches the issue, he said he's going to veto or would veto a national abortion ban, but
he might be the one that keeps that issue in the forefront.
Potentially, and you know, we're talking on a day in which the Wisconsin Supreme Court is hearing arguments on an abortion-related case.
Which you can watch on Wisconsin Eye,
yes,
by the way.
Yes, you can.
And you can read about it in the Cap Times and the State Journal.
Exactly.
So, you know, this issue is going to stay in the news, and I can't imagine Democrats are going to shift away from it.
In that upcoming state Supreme Court election next spring, the one that nobody wants to talk about, it's largely believed that that abortion issue is what catapulted Janet Protasiewicz to her victory 2 years ago. What issues do you think might predict that election in 2025?
I don't think economy is going to play as big of a role in the Supreme Court election, because I think most voters realize that Supreme Court justices don't really have a role to play in the economy. Sure, they can uphold or strike down business regulations and things like that, which those do have a role to play in the economy, but issues like access to abortion or other healthcare issues, things like that, is where Supreme Court justices can actually make an impact.
So that issue might stay alive for that race.
I definitely think we will see it stay alive for that race. And even going further into the future, you know, if we see the economy start to recover and that's less on people's minds, other things are going to be coming to the front of the mind. So, you know, maybe there's 16% of people who abortion is the top issue for them right now. That number could grow if all the people who are worried about the economy stop worrying about it.
Moving on to the state legislature, we had new maps in our state legislative races. Would you say that the results proved the Democrats' points that they've been making now for years, that the previous map was gerrymandered by Republicans?
Yes and no. Democrats had a really, really strong night, particularly in the state Senate in these legislative races, a little bit less so in the state assembly, where there was some talk of maybe they could win control of the chamber. But, you know, you did see some of the districts where they had used as a poster child for the gerrymandering issue in Sheboygan, which was previously divided in two, Whitewater, which was previously divided in two, the La Crosse area.
Democrats won in those areas.
Yeah, and you know, maybe that will help support that point moving forward. And also, I would say it gives Democrats a presence in parts of the state that they maybe had less so. You know, there was talk of, is this going to influence turnout in different parts of the state? I don't know that people, as much as I would like to believe it's true, are super motivated to go to the polls to vote for their state senator. But, you know, when in terms of building infrastructure, building the party down ballot, it can't hurt to now have competitive races in places like Sheboygan.
Andrew mentioned Speaker Voss spoke about those election results in the Assembly. The Assembly Republicans lost 10 seats, but Speaker Voss called that a victory for his party. Would you agree? Was that a victory for Republicans?
I think it's hard to frame a loss of 10 seats as a victory, really. Maybe if Voss is under the impression that the new maps are gerrymandered to favor Democrats more than they should, then yeah, I suppose he could claim a victory on there and on that front. But, 54 seats is still the majority, and Republicans still hold the majority. Speaker Voss is going to run for Speaker again. I think it's a win in that, yeah, they didn't lose the majority. I don't think there was ever a major likelihood that Democrats were going to take the majority from Republicans. So I think they kind of stemmed their bleeding more so than they won a victory here.
You mentioned that another big win for Democrats other than Senator Baldwin's win was in the state Senate, where they picked up four of the seats that they had been targeting. What were any big surprises in state Senate seats, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, that, I think, is the unequivocal victory for Democrats. To bat 1,000 on all the races you wanted to win, and two in particular, defeating two incumbents, I think the big surprise was in the 8th Senate District.
Senator Dewey Strobel,
yeah,
and Jody Hamish Sinikin.
Yeah, it was kind of going back and forth over the campaign. There was a debate whether Senator Strobel or Senator Joan Balwig in Senate District 14, who lost to Sarah Kieske, a Democrat from Lodi, which of those was more vulnerable? The end result was we saw millions and millions of dollars spent, and they both lost. And, you have a very clear pathway in 2 years for Democrats to take back a majority in the state Senate, much more likely, I would say, than in the state Assembly even. And that could be a pretty considerable development, irregardless of who wins the governor's race.
Adam, how do you expect this shift in the state Senate? They now will have an 18-15 majority for Republicans. How will that affect how that body works in the legislature?
I don't think it's going to have a major, major impact, to be honest. I think one of the things that I've been paying attention to actually in the Senate is leadership elections, because we're seeing Chris Kapinga, Republican, he's not going to be Senate president anymore. Sounds like it's likely going to be Mary Felczkowski, which makes me wonder if the legislature is going to get medical marijuana done this year.
Because that's been her priority.
Exactly. And Democrats have a stronger presence in the Senate, a much stronger presence in the Assembly. The Assembly was already largely on board with medical marijuana. There are some minor kind of provisional issues in the bill proposals put forth last session, which actually did center around Mary Felczkowski's issues with the privately owned dispensaries. If they can work that one out, though, I think there's a strong pathway for that one and possibly some other pretty major pieces of legislation, as long as the two sides can kind of let go of their super strong principles and find some way to compromise. I think there will be some work done in the legislature.
And Republicans will be looking toward those next elections and wanting to have some wins, would you say?
I think that was the hope with the new maps, is that with more competitive elections, they can't sit back and try and deny Governor Evers potential legislative victories, because they need something to go to their constituents. And, Adam mentioned medical marijuana. That's something that polling shows is very popular among people in, average Wisconsinites.
So do we expect more bipartisan compromise now with those smaller margins for Republicans?
Democrats want to believe so. I think I could see it in some cases, because last session we already saw where Democratic votes in the state Senate were needed to pass some big pieces of legislation. Shared revenue overhaul, state funding to renovate Miller Park. Those are bills that would not have passed without Democratic support. And with only kind of a 1 or 2 vote margin of error, Senate Majority Leader maybe looking around and trying to see, well, who are my allies on the inside
circle? Won't be able to necessarily rely just on Republican votes for some of the big deals this time around.
Potentially.
Another big winner on election night seemed to be schools, with all the school referendums on the ballot. 78% of school funding requests were approved. WisPolitics reported that it was a record $3.4 billion out of $4.3 billion requested by school districts. Does this send any message to the legislature about education funding in the budget?
I think it could. I mean, we saw the Assembly Speaker explicitly talk about, you know, getting something done on school funding during his comments to the media on last week. And, you know, talking with candidates, Republican candidates running in the legislative races, they were frequently pointing to the need to do something about local school aid and local aid for municipalities, shared revenue. And so, you know, for those who won, I suspect maybe in caucus they might be sitting around saying, we're talking about wins to go back to your district, those would be two areas where they would kind of like a win.
What do you think the message of those passage of referendums is?
I definitely agree with Andrew. I think the legislature would be, I don't want to say all the members, but, you know, we like Andrew said, Voss has said he wants to do more funding for schools. There's a lot of legislators who live in districts where the residents are asking for more funding for their schools. Governor Evers would be more than likely happy to sign more funding for schools.
The education governor, he calls himself.
Right, yeah, former DPI secretary. I don't know in what world he would sign. He would veto more funding, at least for public schools. I could maybe see if the funding was only for voucher schools, I could potentially see Evers vetoing that.
There might be a pairing again of an increase for both.
Right, but yeah, on the flip side, I couldn't see the Republican legislature proposing more public school funding without more voucher school funding.
So the state still has this $4 billion record surplus. We saw Speaker Voss kind of hint around about that last week when he talked about the election. Is this being set up for the big showdown in the biennial budget of what happens with that $4 billion?
It seems like it, and, you know, already Republicans are talking about a reprise of the tax proposals that they put forward and which Governor Evers vetoed. I feel like that's going to be the, you know, if we're looking for an area where everyone can sit around and play let's make a deal, that would seem to be a pretty obvious one where everyone can claim a victory of cutting taxes ahead of the 2026 midterms.
You think there's going to be some form of tax, a big tax cut in the next biennial budget?
I don't know if I'd go so far as saying it's going to be a big tax cut, but I could definitely see some sort of tax cut in the next budget, likely for retirees would be my guess, because that's what Voss specifically talked about. He wants to do some sort of income tax-free retirement, so your income as a retiree is not taxed anymore. That would be a pretty expensive project, I think, and there might be some negotiation on how exactly to get it done or who's, you know, going to be exempt from that or not. Voss said if you make under $100,000 if you're retired, then your retirement would be free. We haven't seen a bill come out from that, so I don't know the exact details on it, but I would have a hard time seeing Democrats push back against that.
What about the need for a new prison in Wisconsin? Do you think that has potential to shape up as a big cornerstone or compromise or battle in this next biennial budget? I know the governor's talked about he wants, for sure, criminal justice reform.
Yeah, I could see this being an area where, you know, there's a shared interest in getting it done, but also the governor has been fairly upfront saying he does not want to go there as far as building a new prison, at least not yet. So he would have to
Something.
Yeah, or have a pretty big shift in opinion or think, you know, read the room and think there would be a big shift in public opinion. So it certainly is something to watch because the issues around Waupun and Green Bay are not going away anytime soon.
And that's something we've heard Representative Mark Bourne, chair of Joint Finance, say is a priority for him. Do you think there'll be a new prison or some sort of criminal justice reform in that biennial budget?
I think we will see some sort of criminal justice reform and definitely some spending on state prisons. I don't know if we will see a new prison built or proposed, mostly because I don't think either side wants to be credited with building a new prison. You know, we saw former Governor Tommy Thompson, longtime Republican. Republicans love him. He even has said he built too many prisons. I don't think Republicans want to restart that process. Evers has said he doesn't want to build a new prison without significant criminal justice reform. So what we'll likely see is some sort of criminal justice reform with some sort of spending on prisons. Maybe it's, you know, we're going to put a little bit aside for whenever we do figure out how we're going to build a new prison or at least make some of our prisons less relevant so that we can tear those down and build a more modern, efficient replacement.
Lots of options on the table.
Something will have to be done.
We've been talking about Governor Evers. We're going to have an election for governor in 2 years. What do we know about how last Tuesday's election's results might impact whether Governor Evers runs for a third term?
It's a good question, and I suspect a lot of people in the Democratic Party have been thinking about it a little bit because he is still quite popular. You know, Marquette University Law School polling shows that he's one of the most popular figures in the state, but I believe it, you know, if he runs and were to win by the end of his next four-year term, he would be 79. That's a little bit on the older side, and you know, there was conversations with President Biden was still in the race and with President Trump.
It might work against him, his age.
Yeah, that maybe people don't want older politicians to stick around, but you know, he's going to have to make a decision in fairly short order because that would be a sizable Democratic primary to succeed him if he opts not to run.
I want to move on to issues at the federal level. We know when President Trump ran, his campaign promises included tariffs, mass deportation, and unraveling of Biden policies. Is there any way to look at how, when Wisconsin might feel any impacts of those types of policy shifts? Are there any signs of that?
It's hard to point to any like data points as signs that we can really just watch like day by day and say like, hey, that number is going up or down, and you know, we see Trump policies in effect.
He's already appointing people on border security issues.
Oh yeah, and I think that's where we're going to see the most glaring impacts in Wisconsin is the deportation issue, because a lot of farms around Wisconsin, not everyone obviously, but a lot of them rely on undocumented labor because it's a lot easier to pay an undocumented worker under minimum wage or much lower than you normally would other workers, and farms have a really slim margin right now for profit. So they really have to cut expenses wherever they can. So if you see, you know, produce start to increase in price or just not be available on the shelves, that could be a result of undocumented workers getting deported.
So that's one policy change that we might feel here in Wisconsin. Anything else from the Trump campaign that you think we might be feeling in Wisconsin in short order?
Yeah, well, you know, there have been various indications that he might look to pare back some of President Biden's signature legislative wins, including the Inflation Reduction Act.
And claw back unspent funds.
Yeah, it's still probably too soon to say what that might look like, but, you know, clean energy groups, environmental groups, you know, folks from both parties have cheered the impacts of the IRA in blue states and red states and purple states like Wisconsin. So, you know, that could be an area where there might be some developments, and folks, particularly folks interested in using some of these programs, will want to keep an eye on.
We've heard a lot about election integrity over the last several years. Was election integrity a winner, a loser on election night?
I would say in many ways it was a winner because, once again, we had a free, fair, and accurate election in Wisconsin, and no one is really disputing that, despite some issues in the city of Milwaukee. You know, there really have the kinds of conspiracy theories we saw 4 years ago have not taken hold, and that could be hopefully a good thing in the long run.
Do we think voters have regained trust in the election system? Was that a sign, or remains to be seen?
I think it remains to be seen. I think we regained some trust, at least. I don't know if everyone who suddenly was interested in conspiracy theories around the elections back in 2020 has been, you know, returned back to normal yet. But I do think it is remarkable over 4 years that with a victory margin not much wider than it was back in 2020, we've seen a lot, like pretty much all of the lawsuits seeking to disenfranchised voters have gone away, basically. And the, you know, the biggest obvious change is the top of the ticket switched parties.
So last question for both of you. What can we expect in your reporting in upcoming weeks and months? What is something that you're looking at right now?
I think the biggest thing will be, you know, we discussed it towards the end here, but the human impact and the policy impact on Wisconsin as we start to get a clearer sense of what President Trump will want to implement. That's really what we're going to be focused on, is what does this mean for Wisconsinites?
And you?
Yeah, I think it's really hard to say what I'll be exactly watching for in the next, you know, 4 months or so. One thing I'm really curious about is what will federal aid to states look like? Is the Trump administration going to continue providing federal-funded resources to states, to U.S. citizens, or are they going to try to kind of pare back some of that, the resource, because it does cost the federal government money to provide people resources, but Are they going to try and pare back those resources and try to privatize industries or pare back regulations? You know, there's a lot of things to watch.
And I know you'll both be looking forward to the next election in the spring in that state Supreme Court. So maybe we'll have you back. Thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
Nicolet Bank is honored to support all who strive to make communities great. You have been watching a production of Wisconsin Eye, your unfiltered window into legislative deliberations and public policy programming, where our mission is to provide Wisconsinites an opportunity to access the legislative process and connect with conversations that inform our citizenry. Please consider supporting our mission, and thank you for watching. Wisconsin Eye, policy made public.